designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
I gotta say, Nerjiti, you sound loud today.
Yeah, you do. Your voice is
What up? Positive.
3 years later.
Solid takes.
Volume high.
Hey there. Welcome to season 11 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season, we were inspired by the number 11, which is, as you know by now, a pair of ones. So this season's theme is pairs, duos. We are talking about ladies who were a part of a professional pair in some fashion.
As always, we are not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find, you know, as friends having a fun conversation. So if you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right. So on today's episode, we will talk about Isabel Roberts and Ida Anna Ryan, architects who worked in Orlando, Florida. I'm Lizzie Rahr, surviving foggist in San Francisco, and I'm joined by my fellow co-hosts, Jessica and Nerjiti.
I'm Nerjiti Rivas, trying not to get blown away by random storms in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Jessica Rogers, melting in forever summer, based out of Miami, Florida.
All right. So today, ladies, we're talking about two ladies who had a partnership together, Isabel and Ida. We're going to tell their stories before they met and after.
Yes, woman power.
Cute. I'm excited to see how this pans out.
All right, so we're going to start with Isabel. So on March 7th, 1871, Isabel Roberts was born in Mexico, Missouri, which at first glance, I thought she was born in Mexico, but no, not Mexico, Missouri.
Who knew that there was a Mexico, Missouri?
I did not.
No.
Okay, so I got excited that she was born in Mexico. I was like, hey, we're talking about a fellow Latina.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, we'll take Mexico, Missouri, I guess. Lizzie, did you look up why the town was named Mexico?
I did not. I didn't get that far. I just thought, what a coincidence.
Well, I looked it up.
Oh.
Get ready. I thought maybe a lot of Mexicans moved there, but that was not the case. They decided to call the town Mexico because people were super excited for the war happening in Texas.
Oh my gosh.
What? Getting independence from Mexico. And Mexico and Texas were seen like places Americans went to make a fortune. So they thought calling the town Mexico would make it popular. And then the town grew kind of quickly, so I guess it totally worked.
Okay. That sounds like the most American thing I have ever heard of.
Right?
Oh, my gosh. For me, I wondered if people got confused thinking that they were going to Mexico, like Mexico, and ended up going to Missouri. But this also gives me like episode 77, Charlotte Baldwin Allen vibes, the mother of Houston.
Yes.
Which, I don't know, sounds like good marketing for the state of Missouri.
Agreed. Yeah, that's true.
Hey there.
Well, Isabel's parents were James and Mary Roberts. James was a mechanic originally from Utica, New York, and her mom, Mary, was actually Canadian from Prince Edward Island. Her parents met in New York in 1867, but moved to Missouri shortly after that. Isabel had an older sister named Charlotte.
Charlotte vibes.
Canadians and Utica, then they ended up in Missouri. Interesting.
Yeah. I know we made a thing about Mexico, Missouri, but the family moved to Providence, Rhode Island, like not too long after that. And eventually they set down roots in South Bend, Indiana.
Boy.
And her dad worked at a machine shop called Oliver Childe Plow Factory in South Bend for many years. And then in 1901, he became the deputy director of inspections for the state of Indiana.
Okay, I'm not going to look up into the histories of those towns because then we'll never finish this episode.
No.
Yeah, the episode would never end. They sure moved a lot, though.
Yeah, they did. The family was an active member in the Presbyterian Church and attended First Press of South Bend. Isabel continued to be active in the Presbyterian Church later in life, which did lead to several commissions or connections that led to commissions. So that's why we're noting it.
That's great that she had a community and that she was active there. One thing always leads to another, honestly.
For sure. I like that she was able to find work for the community that they were a part of.
So I don't know much about Isabel's early education, but in 1899, at 28 years old, she moved to New York City to study at the Atelier Masqueray Chambers. Okay, so this was a private atelier started by a French architect, Emmanuel Masqueray, and an American architect, Walter B. Chambers. They started this atelier as sort of an American École des Beaux-Arts. So they were teaching students here in the style of the École, which Emmanuel had studied at. Well, in 1899, they decided that they should open up the atelier to women. And so Isabel came and studied there for 3 years.
That's pretty neat. I've never heard of the school, but it sounds like a great way for people in this side of the pond to have access to a piece of the École des Beaux-Arts education if they didn't have the means to go all the way to France.
Agreed.
True.
That's really neat. I also like that they opened it to women. I wonder if they had the same entrance requirements like the École des Beaux-Arts. Either way, still cool though.
Yeah. In 1901, she finished her studies and moved to Illinois, where she was hired by Frank Lloyd Wright at his Oak Park studio and became colleagues with our girl Marion and part of the famous Prairie School.
Oh, hey. Way to make connections, Isabel. I better listen to episode 43 and brush up on my Marion Mayne Griffin history.
Yeah, I love to see it.
Yeah. Okay, so as we know, Frank was notoriously not great at sharing credit for projects. So over the years, there's been some debate on what Isabel did at the studio. Most often, she is listed as the accountant or office manager and the nanny. Mm. But it sounds like she was doing those jobs, but she was also drafting and working on the design of projects.
Okay, it's one thing to forget to give people credit for their work, and it's another thing to list their job title as accountant / office manager / nanny when we know this lady studied architecture, so she was most definitely, to the very least, drafting. Unless Frank was a terrible business person that hired overqualified people for tasks, which I mean, maybe, who knows. Either way, it's insulting.
So insulting. Isabel couldn't have known, right? Like, she couldn't have known that she was being referred to as the nanny. Like, I'd be pissed.
I don't know. I mean, his studio was attached to his house, so I also don't know if she actually was watching the kids sometimes. Like, that was sort of what I read, was like, she may have been doing all of those jobs, but she also was doing architecture. But all that is to say, there are several quotes that confirm that she was, in fact, an architectural employee in addition to running the office. Thomas A. Hines said, "She was an architect in her own right, and her talent and position in Wright's Oak Park office has been largely ignored and underestimated."
Say it, Thomas.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And clock that. She was running the office part. Isabel was running things, okay?
Yes. She was a critical player in two of Frank's well-known projects. The first was the Casey DeRhodes House in South Bend, Indiana. So the house was commissioned by Laura Caskey DeRhodes. And Laura Caskey was a family friend of Isabel and her parents because they both went to First Press of South Bend together. So Isabel was the one who introduced Laura to Frank to get this commission and helped in the design of the house.
Okay. So now she's even bringing work. Frank doesn't deserve her.
Nope, not at all.
The second project was the Isabel Roberts House in River Forest, Illinois, which you gotta believe she worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah, she did.
Of course.
So in 1908, Isabel's dad, James, died. So her mother moved to Illinois and commissioned this house in River Forest, a suburb of Chicago, so that she could live in it with her two daughters.
Oh, that's bittersweet.
Yeah, but the sentiment is lovely.
Yeah. So the house has a cruciform plan set around a hearth with a two-story living room towards the street with full-height diamond-paned windows. The house is a split level, which was not common at that time, but helped keep the low profile of the house that was common for the prairie style. The house also had continuous gutters with large overhangs similar to the Roby house.
Ooh, I see the style shining through.
Yes, it sounds stunning.
The following year, in 1909, Frank ran off to Europe with Mamaw Cheney and left his employees and some former employees in charge of all his projects. We discussed this a bit on Marion's episode, but Frank put in charge Herman V. von Holst to finish the projects and close the office. This included Isabel and John Van Bergen, who were still working at the studio. We also know that Marion was brought in as a principal designer to help finish the work.
What a great business owner. Thank goodness there was serious people to finish the work they were already doing.
I was wondering where Isabel would land in this Frank Lloyd Wright saga. I could not imagine. What a mess.
Yeah. Once the projects were done, one source I found said that Isabel literally locked the doors to the studio when it was all done, by the way. And that ended the Oak Park years of Frank's career.
Wow, what a tangible closing of a chapter, literally and metaphorically.
She literally closed the chapter in that part of the story. But I'm excited to know what happens next.
So after this, Isabel worked for William Drummond, who had also worked for Frank but had opened his own firm by then. She may also have worked for Herman after he went out on his own as well.
Glad she's working.
Yeah, as crappy as it sounds, it must have been a little bit more comforting since all of the architects and designers were experiencing the same thing at the same time, so they could at least look after each other.
Yeah. So Isabel's mom, Mary, wasn't doing so well health-wise after having influenza. So they started going to Florida in the winter of 1915 because Isabel's sister, Charlotte, had already moved there with her husband, John. Then, in 1916, Isabel and Mary moved permanently to St. Cloud, Florida, which is a suburb of Orlando. Mary eventually passed away in 1920.
Aww.
So sad. I'm hoping that moving to the Sunshine State made the transition a little bit better.
Yeah.
How sad.
They apparently put the Isabel Roberts House in Illinois on the market back in 1910, but it didn't sell until 1923, years later. After they moved to Florida, a former Oak Park colleague, Henry Robinson, lived in the house from 1919 to 1923. And then in 1923, William Drummond, who apparently lived next door, bought the house and renovated it. Then years later in 1955, Frank actually worked on the house again and remodeled it again.
Okay, what a story. Number one, I can't believe this house was on the market for 13 years. That sounds like a real estate agent's nightmare. Number two, this also sounds like a prairie style architect's dream house. Let's just share a house and take turns living in it and remodeling it. That sounds great. And number three, after what he did, Frank shouldn't even be allowed to step foot in it. He should be ashamed of himself. This guy has no shame. Obviously, we know that.
Yeah. Instant, like, tomatoes and, like, bird poop just thrown at him. as he walks into the house. Yep, I took it there. Extreme. He deserves all the punishments. Anyway, all fair points, Najdi. But based on Lizzie's earlier description on what the house looked like, it sounded very unique that I'm not sure if a traditional family might find appealing. A house that unique, only an architect would want to live in and would appreciate.
Maybe. Hard to say. Okay, now we're going to pause Isabel's story because we can't forget about Ida.
Yeah, I've been wondering when these two would meet.
Yes, excited to see how this story continues.
All right, so we're going back in time to November 4th, 1883. Ida Anna Ryan was born in Waltham, Massachusetts. Her parents were Albert Morse Ryan and Carrie S. Jameson, and she had four siblings. Albert was a historian and a city employee.
Ooh, fun, a historian. I like that.
Ida graduated from Waltham High School, and in 1892, she started taking classes at the Massachusetts Normal Art School, which is now Mass College of Art and Design. In 1894, she received a diploma in elementary drawing and constructive art and design.
Yeah, get that diploma.
I wonder what elementary drawing and also Massachusetts Normal Art School. I feel like we had another one of our ladies go to this school, but like early on, maybe.
She then enrolled at MIT to study architecture. She did really well in school and won several awards and competitions, including the Arthur Rauch Prize, which was given to a graduating MArch student for achievement in architectural design. She got her MArch in 1906, and a lot of sources list her as the first woman to graduate from MIT with an MArch. But another source I found said that this was incorrect, but it didn't list who was first instead of her. But, you know, we don't want to be starting rumors, so.
Well, we can confidently say that she was one of the first.
Yes. Interesting. So someone that's on our, like, story that we want to tell list is Sophia Hayden. And I think she's also considered to be one of the first to complete the program as well. But maybe she wasn't allowed to graduate, you know, like back then, like you could do it, but they ain't going to give you a diploma. I don't know. Either way, Sophia Hayden, future episode alert.
In 1907, Ida won the Perkins Traveling Fellowship. Because of this fellowship, she got to travel to Europe for a year to further study architecture. She spent a lot of time in Spain and Italy during that year.
Mm. That sounds like a fellowship I should apply for immediately. Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't want to travel to Spain or Italy? Ugh, sounds lovely.
In 1907, Ida also applied for membership to the AIA and was denied, being 9 votes short. She was also denied membership to the Boston Society of Architects. Both of these rejections were due to her gender. Even though there were already a few women in the AIA, she still didn't make the cut.
Mm. Always with this BS.
Yeah.
I'm also not surprised. If we recall Louise Bethune, episode 9, she needed male allies to help grant her membership.
But this did not keep Ida down.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we would be telling her story if it did. Our ladies are always resilient. I wonder which one of her endeavors pans out.
Well, in 1909, she started her own architecture firm in Waltham with a fellow MIT grad, Florence Luscombe. Their firm was one of the first all-female architecture firms in the country. They worked on many projects in Waltham, including several residences.
Yeah! Take that, silly societies. She's starting all-women firms. What you gonna do about it, huh? Watch her thrive, that's what. Mm.
Making her way with a fellow lady. Let's go!
In 1913, Ida served as the superintendent of buildings and grounds and the building inspector for the city of Waltham.
She's working for the government now, okay.
Ooh, interesting.
She got a widespread.
Mm-hmm.
In 1915, Ida started working in Nashua, New Hampshire with Harriet F. Locke. They designed the Memorial Hospital in Nashua.
Ida's collaborating with all them ladies.
Yeah, we love to see the multiple partnerships. And hey, Nashua, shout out to a friend of the show, Joanne, and her hometown.
Ida was active in women's suffrage, and when the U.S. entered World War I, she volunteered and was the first woman employed in the War Department.
Oh, snap. I did not see that coming.
Ooh, we have a few ladies that helped in the war efforts for World War I and II. I'm curious to know what she did.
Yeah, I don't actually know specifics on that, unfortunately. But back in 1913, Ida had gotten a commission down in Florida to design the Unity Chapel of Orlando. So in 1917, when there was a downturn in building due to the war, Ida moved to Central Florida.
Yale, welcome to the Sunshine State.
Here we go. She's in the same state as Isabel. What's gonna happen?
This episode got very musical.
Always.
Okay, so now both of our girls are Floridians and living their best sunshine lives. Sadly, I do not know how the meet cute happened, but what I do know is that sparks flew and these ladies hit it off. They opened up their firm, Ryan and Roberts, in 1920 in Orlando, Florida. And it also sounds like, from research, that they were not only business partners, but life partners.
Whee! What a bummer that we don't know how they met. Jessica, want to make something up?
Okay. So, the untold made-up story is that Isabel and Ida were at a mixer for a quote-unquote women of society. Throughout the whole event, they had stolen glances. Isabel had attended countless events like these to take a break from dealing with her mother's illness. But finally, this event caught her attention because she had heard of a new architect that had come into town. Ida found Isabel to be very attractive, but moving to a new town, she was afraid to make a move. Times were different. Plus, she had heard that Isabel had worked for the Frank Lloyd Wright. Well, across the deviled egg table, and with enough brandy in her cups, Isabel said hello. And then the rest is history. There's your meet cute.
Yes. Beautiful.
I watched a lot of room. Because you know there were some deviled eggs or cucumber sandwiches somewhere on that table. Or, well, no, an ambrosia salad.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I will make up a story anytime. Thank you.
All right. Back to reality or the facts. Ida and Isabel were one of only a handful of architecture firms in Orlando at the time, and Florida was in a booming economy, which meant building was happening, and they were able to design a good variety of projects.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's right. In Orlando, especially at that time, there's plenty of land, and we're looking at the beginning rumblings of Disney. Very much in the land acquisition phase, but rumblings nonetheless.
Yeah. One of their more famous projects was the Veterans Memorial Library in St. Cloud. It was completed in 1923. The building was designed with a large reading room with large windows facing the street to let in a lot of light. It's a symmetrical building, but isn't classical. It's kind of giving Unity Temple vibes. You can definitely see the prairie influence, but it also feels appropriate for a library.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the facade, and it's definitely giving me prairie vibes. I love the idea of light entering beautifully into the library.
Oh, yeah. I can totally see that. And yes, very much prairie vibes.
Today, the building is the St. Cloud Heritage Museum and actually has a lot of documentation about Ida and Isabel and their design of the building.
That's so great. You have to put that in the Arc Ventures list right now.
OMG. First of all, yes to the Arc Venture. And second, I love that they're telling Ida and Isabel's story.
Yes. They also designed the Lake Eola Bandstand in Orlando. It was a small project, but looks really cool because they designed it set out into the lake and then connected it by a small curving bridge. It's more like a pavilion with four columns and a roof over top, but the roof has a very low slope and large cantilevered eaves. It's also a two-tiered roof, kind of like a pagoda. The design is really reminiscent of prairie style again, but especially has the East Asian influences that you find occasionally in prairie style.
That is the smallest site, but very cute. It's exactly as you described. East Asian influence. A la pagoda, more than a pavilion, maybe?
Yeah. The bandstand was very well received, and it became a bit of an Orlando icon. Sadly, the Pigeons also really loved it, and it got torn down in 1956.
Ooh. What the what? That took a weird turn.
I know.
It took a crappy turn, literally.
It was even like a logo or something at some point. Like, it was very well known.
Iconic.
Through the years. But then it kind of fell into disrepair, sadly. Even though Isabel was definitely bringing prairie style to their designs had a variety of styles. They also did a number of projects with a more Spanish revival style, which was typical in Florida. In 1924, they designed a renovation of the First Presbyterian Church of St. Cloud after they had a fire. The building looks very Spanish style. It almost reminds me of like California Mission style, but sadly, this project was also demolished in 1966.
I'm glad they're bringing context into their designs, but also, what's up with all these building demolitions?
I know.
Right? I would have loved to see them. I'm also like, honestly, I'm just loving how they were adapting their designs to what was happening locally. It would have been great to see.
Yeah. So the Amherst Apartments was another project of Ida and Isabel's, a 47-unit building in Orlando. It was apparently one of the hot apartment addresses to live in back in the day. And a few other notable projects are the Ross E. Jeffries Elementary School in St. Cloud, the Pennsylvania Hotel Building in St. Cloud, Unity Chapel in Orlando, as well as several private residences, including their own house in Orlando.
Work, 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 work.
That's awesome. I do wonder, out of those buildings listed, which ones still exist today? Or did the birds love them too?
I think some of them do still exist. Like, I think the elementary school does. I can't remember off the top of my head, but all right. At some point, Ida received an architectural license in Florida. I could not find out when she got this, but in 1921, she reapplied to the AIA and was finally accepted.
Yeah.
However, Isabel also applied to become a member of the AIA in 1921 and was denied because she did not have her license in Florida.
Mm.
Her application included several letters of support from her former colleagues, such as John Van Bergen, Herman von Holst, and even from Frank himself. Frank wrote, "Miss Isabel Roberts was my assistant in the practice of architecture for several years, and I can recommend her without reservation to anyone requiring the services of an architect."
Again, with this assistant nonsense. Like, yo. Like, yay for Ida, but boo for Isabel. Like, I don't know. Her reasoning seems maybe, like, a little bit legit. Like, if she wanted to be a member of the local chapter, maybe she should have been licensed. But still, that's dumb.
Yeah, so in other states at this time, admission to the AIA wasn't contingent on licensure, which many of her support letters expressed. But Florida had recently made a change to start licensing and testing in 1915 and make it so that you couldn't call yourself an architect without licensure, from which I could tell led to AIA acceptance in the state being contingent on that as well. So with that in mind, Ida was listed as architect and Isabel was listed as responsible for landscape architecture and architectural development.
I have so many thoughts on this and we have so little time. I mean, rules are rules, I guess. This is a more legit excuse than, oh, you can't come in because you're a woman.
Right.
You know, I better not find out they bended the requirements for men, because then I'll get ticked off again.
Mm.
I do feel sad that she's practicing as an architect alongside the love of her life, and they can't equally call each other architects.
True and true. It's hard to know. And now you're making me wonder how they treated the male applicants.
You know what? I'm about to get ticked off anyway. I'm wondering if they made it hard for women to sit for the exam, because it seems strange this go-getter lady didn't just go take the exam and get licensed. I mean, she was in her 50s, but she could still do it. And you know she would have if she could. This season, we talk about a lady who faced harassment when she went to take the licensing exam. Mm. Future episode alert.
Yeah.
That's the saddest future episode alert. But it's because I'm angry. I have a bad feeling that there was a funny business involving Isabel not getting admitted to the AIA. I don't trust that this was all in the up and up.
Mm-hmm. Now, between licensure and getting into the AIA, I'm not sure. I would hope that there was no funny business with getting licensed, but it also wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I didn't find anything saying that, like, she tried to take the exam, just that she tried to apply for admittance to the AIA. So
Who knows?
In 1929, Ida resigned her membership from the AIA, though, in the wake of the Great Depression, because the firm didn't have enough money anymore. Sadly, the financial crash of 1929 had hit the real estate market of Florida much earlier in 1926. And so they didn't have any new commissions after 1926, and it doesn't look like they had any big projects after 1927.
Oh man, what a big bummer.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. They kept the firm open until 1945 and then closed it down, but it looks like they didn't have any recorded work between 1927 and 1945.
Whoa, that's a long time to keep the firm open without much work. I guess they were semi-retired?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what they did during that time.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but Ida was sick for a long time. I'm not sure with what.
Mm.
But Isabel took care of her at their house, and Ida died on February 17, 1950, at 76 years old. Isabel kept living in the house afterwards, but eventually died of heart failure on December 27, 1955, in Orlando, at 84 years old.
Wow. I'm glad these two ladies found each other and were able to trailblaze left and right together no matter what the hoops life threw at them. Great professional inspiration. And one of them even got a compliment from Frank Lloyd Wright himself. I don't think that happens often.
No, not at all. They were able to live a long life. And like you said, I'm happy that they found each other and that they were able to do great work.
All right. We've now reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drum roll, please. Natalie Apple and Stephanie Millett.
Whee! Yeah. Natalie, Stephanie!
Natalie Apple is an architect in Houston. She got her Bachelor's of Architecture from Rice University and her Master's of Architecture from University of Pennsylvania. In 1987, she opened her own firm in Houston. In 2000, she was made a fellow in the AIA. The firm Natalie Apple & Associates works on a wide variety of project types, civic, institutional, commercial, and residential.
Yeah, I looked them up, and I gotta tell you, I'm pretty sure both of you have been in projects designed by them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is St. Arnold's Brewery expansion, which I took Jessica once when she was visiting Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Levy Park, which I took Lizzie one day when she had a super long layover in Houston.
Oh, yeah. I love to see this. And yeah, I remember that brewery. Good stuff. The place, such a vibe.
Yeah, that was such a nice park.
Mm-hmm.
In 2005, Stephanie Millett joined the firm and she became a partner at the firm in 2010. Stephanie has a BArch from Cal Poly and an MArch from Rice University. I like that this is a women-owned slash led firm with two female partners who are doing a variety of project types. I feel like that reminded me of Isabel and Ida.
I agree. Their portfolio looks amazing. We gotta say that this is a listener suggestion caryatid. So big thank you to Heather Rowell, co-owner of the firm HRDD. I actually was looking to suggest her as the caryatid for this episode. And after I described Isabel and Ida's work, Heather quickly pointed us in Natalie's and Stephanie's direction. I gotta love women shining a light on each other in this profession.
Oh, this makes the story so much better. Look at these caryatids holding each other up. Beautiful.
We love it.
Yay.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.
Is she Spanish? Is she from Spain?
No, I don't know. Don't you know her?
Who is she?
Oh,
you told me about these people.
I have no idea.
How familiar are you with the hidden forces shaping our world? Learn about the spaces you occupy every day with Spaces Podcast, a journey through the design, construction, and the impact of our evolving environments. Hi, I'm Demetrius Lynch, host of Spaces, and I'm thrilled to take you on a ride through the intersections of environment, politics, culture, and economy. Join me and leading industry professionals as we uncover the stories behind the spaces that shape societies, past, present, and future.
Today, there's a certain amount of cynicism and kind of general malaise. Maybe many practices should come together and think about common goals, solving some of the major issues of the day.
If I'm not mistaken, am I seeing like a wallpaper that is imitating books in some places?
Yeah, I have to say, now we are in peace with this. But
subscribe now by following the link in the show notes, and let's unravel the secrets of our built world together. Spaces Podcast. Go beyond the everyday, because spaces shape society.